it's a system that is so enormous that how do you fix something that is that big? And you start by people investing in themselves, and brave people that have courage like yourself that are willing to stand up and be on podcasts and interview people like myself. People like myself that had the courage to go to school 30 years ago, you know, way long before this was even popularized. And we've had to fight the system for years and stand for what we knew was right.
He's a best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, inspirational speaker, certified nutrition coach, plant-powered athlete, and host of the number one holistic health podcast in the world, Nathan Crane.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Before we get started, I want to give you a free gift that I have spent over a decade researching thousands of hours of peer-reviewed studies and interviewing hundreds of world-leading functional medical doctors and cancer conquerors that lays out a blueprint for helping your mind and body become a cancer-fighting fortress for natural cancer prevention and healing. And that's my Amazon number one best-selling book, Becoming Cancer-Free. The physical copy sells for like 10 bucks on Amazon, which, you know, you can go get that if you want, but I'm happy to give you the ebook absolutely free. Just head over to becomingcancerfree.com and you can download that ebook instantly. Again, that's becomingcancerfree.com, and it's yours as a gift for me to you for tuning into this podcast. All right, let's get to the show. Welcome back to the podcast. I am super excited to have Dr. Daniel Rubin here with us. Dr. Dan is a naturopathic oncologist with over 20 years of practice in Arizona. 2004, he became the founding president of the Oncology Association of Naturopathic Physicians and has become an internationally recognized naturopathic oncologist. Dr. Rubin is co-founder and medical director of naturopathic specialists in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is a beautiful place. We were just talking offline here, and that's where we did our Holistic Leadership Council retreat last year, and it was just one of the most beautiful places in the desert there to do it. He practices full-time as a physician, and he's an expert in the naturopathic approach to people with cancer who are either unable to undergo conventional therapy or who choose not to. Dr. Dan, thanks for coming to the podcast, man.
Love it. Thank you for having me. Looking forward to chatting and getting to know you.
Absolutely. So for people who don't know, can you explain the difference between naturopathic oncology and conventional oncology?
No. So absolutely. Been doing this for 27 years and started in the late 90s, got out of school at a naturopathic medical school, and all I was really interested in was oncology. And at that time, there was very little known in the non-conventional world. And compared to where we are right now with the conventional world, there was also very little known. As things went, early on in my career, we didn't really know about integrative oncology. We were just kind of doing what we were doing. Conventionalists were doing what we were doing. But I, during my schooling and during my initial residency, I spent a lot of hours in hospitals and in conventional offices, because especially during school, I knew that my patients that I was seeing were primarily going through conventional treatment. So I felt the duty to go learn about that. So I probably did a couple hundred extra hours just going around into these offices, you know, cold calling from the back of your classroom, trying to get in. That was in the mid 90s. Fast forward a little bit, and the realization struck me that really conventional oncology, in my opinion, I'm saying this because I don't know all of your listenership, and I'm certainly not a purist when it comes to its naturopathic oncology or non-conventional, or that's it. I'm an integrative doc. And I foresaw through my work that conventional oncology was headed in a very reasonable and a good direction. And I really put the effort in and wanted to, I understood that the grand majority of patients are going to be undergoing something conventional. So again, it's my duty to understand oncology first, be a naturopathic oncologist second, and see how we could team up. And I ditched the word complementary a long time ago. I ditched the word alternative a long time ago, and really just focused on integrative, because we're working together in the village. And that's how we've built our practice here in Scottsdale, right behind on the Honor Health campus at 92nd and Shea, for those of you who know the area. Right directly behind me is a big research pavilion, and the building right, well, to the left of the screen is, I think there's 6 oncology practices, radiation oncology, and this is a hospital campus. So we're not employees, but we're tenants in the building, and we deliberately put our practice here. We had to get vouched for and accepted by the CEO, and head oncologist had a vouch for us. So we're integrative oncology. The difference is conventional oncology, again, this is my opinion, conventional oncology is so far superior at killing cancer cells than we are as non-conventionalists. And that's everybody else that's doing oncology work, in my opinion, who is not using a chemotherapeutic, a biological, a radiation, surgical intervention, conventional immunotherapy, anything that goes or comes from the conventional side. They're good at killing, but they're not good at the resilience. They're not good at treating the human aspect of everything else in the biophysiology. And the reason I know that is because I don't have 10 clinics, because I'm constantly getting referrals from medical oncology. They don't utilize us as much. They do have dietitians. They do have some integrative centers. They have art therapy, massage therapy, yoga, acupuncture, certainly, you know, some of the larger centers here. But on the whole, they lack absolute understanding. A lot of the doctors are very frightened of the what they believe the possibility is from a protocol from a doctor like myself, even though I'm so seasoned. So I would say naturopathic oncology joins in the village of non-conventional practitioners, and we do what we do for the person with cancer that's not conventional care. And don't get me wrong, I respect the heck out of conventional oncology and where it's going. What I don't respect is the lack of the fundamental need for everything else that it takes for a human to be resilient and a human to trudge through those therapies. Because we know that the success rate, you know, it's a general success rate. It doesn't work all the time. It doesn't work a large portion of the time for different types of cancers at different stages. And so how do you then support a patient so those treatments could either be more effective, or they could at least, you know, through the system, get to the next treatment that may have a better chance of working? We can discuss what that means. And so, I don't know, it's a long-winded definition. It's not really a true definition of naturopathic oncology. But I think through our discussion, if people hang on and listen, they'll begin to understand how a naturopathic doctor who then specializes in oncology and is a board certified naturopathic oncologist would approach the person with cancer. And it all starts with that lingo. We don't use cancer patient in our clinic. We use person with cancer. So we're all already elevating the person above the disease and above the diagnosis. And that's fundamental. So.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's part of how we start. Thank you.
Have you heard of PEMF therapy for cancer? Well, this podcast is brought to you by Dr. Pollock, and he wants to share with you the groundbreaking research of pulsed electromagnetic field therapy in the treatment of cancer. Studies show PEMF therapy can help control the cancer process and give safe, non-toxic, and non-invasive symptom management. PEMF therapy may enhance other cancer support and treatments, lower inflammation, and promote tissue healing. Studies show it's possible to improve your general well-being and recuperate from surgery, radiation, and chemo better and more quickly. Embrace a comprehensive approach to cancer treatment with PEMF therapy, a vital tool on your path to prevention, treatment, and recovery. For caring and professional guidance and recommendations from Dr. Pollock, go to drpollock.com/intro to cancer. That's drpawluk.com/intro to cancer. You know, with the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I use Maison Beljanski's wellness products. Maison Beljanski's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. coming from Europe. The all-natural Beljansky formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljansky's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljansky has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan. And you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order four products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at maisonbeljansky.com. That's MAISONBELJANSKI, maisonbeljansky.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off. This podcast is brought to you by Econugenics, the makers of Pectisol Modified Citrus Pectin. Pectisol is clinically proven and backed by over 80 studies, 6 patents, and 30-plus years of clinical success. We're all familiar with inflammation and chronic diseases like cancer, but have you ever wondered where these health issues actually come from? You need to read more about an inflammatory protein called galectin-3. It's been called by thousands of practitioners and research papers one of the root causes of nearly every chronic illness. Pectisol Modified Citrus Pectin is the most researched galectin-3 blocker on the market. It's been recommended by thousands of doctors for over 30 years to support oncology, immune health, and gentle detoxification. I personally use Pectisol, and I highly recommend it. Start your journey toward a healthier you with Pectisol Modified Citrus Pectin, and Econugenics is offering our listeners 15% off at econugenics.link/ncrane15. You'll be able to use ncrane15 as a discount code to get 15% off your order. Again, that's econugenics.link/ncrane15. That's huge. I mean, everything, you know, so much of health and healing comes down to perspective and our own perspective on the disease that we might be diagnosed with and how that impacts us mentally, emotionally, psychologically, physically, spiritually, in every way possible. And yeah, we can dive into the details and the science behind that as well. But I've heard it said so powerfully that if you're sick and you go to your doctor and your doctor doesn't ask you about your diet, about exercise, about your sleep, about stress in your life, about the environment in which you live, and all they do is prescribe you a drug, then they're not really a doctor, they're a drug dealer. And I know that sounds harsh, but when you put it in such simple terms, I mean, how can you see it any other way?
Well, I can't agree with you just because I'm in the community and I can't put that label on my colleagues who might, you know, just give a drug. I think we, in my opinion, I would qualify that differently because obviously you see in your primary care and you might go for an acute visit and I don't think you mean somebody who just has pneumonia and goes to their doctor real quick and does get the drug, but they're not discussing that.
Let's say let's qualify and say cancer, diabetes, heart disease, right? Lifestyle, diet and lifestyle related diseases, diseases that we know are primarily preventable in the mass majority of the human population. Now, of course, aside from, you know, people being born with certain disorders, which is a very, very small percentage of the population, but the largest cohorts of people who have these chronic metabolic diseases are primarily diet and lifestyle related, and transcend, you know, genetic predisposition. So I would say in that context, and like I said, it is harsh, and I heard it said recently, and I thought, you know what, that's very, very powerful. And to a lot of people, that's how they see it. You know, they're seeing it more that way, that, you know, you have cancer, you have diabetes, you have heart disease, you're obese, you have, you know, fibromyalgia, whatever it is, and you go in and your doctor doesn't ask you anything about diet and lifestyle, and all they do is prescribe you a drug. You know, how is that healthcare today? I mean, how can you call that healthcare when they're not truly trained in how to help you take care of your health, when in fact they're prescribing a drug that are primarily masking symptoms?
Yeah, well, we would say it's sick care. It's not healthcare, and that's a misnomer. It's sort of the reason that why do you have to have an organic section in, or a health food section in the grocery store? Like, that, it doesn't make sense. And so you're talking about a system that really, they don't think about it. There's a belief system as well. And that's another word that we really try to keep out of our clinic is belief. Not when we're talking about spirituality, but when we're talking about a patient comes in and says, well, I'm not going to tell my oncologist that I'm seeing you because they don't believe in this. And I'm like, well, there's nothing to believe in. I'm a human with a clinic, and we have substances that have known mechanisms of action and data behind them. It's not belief, it's objective. And that's how I approach that. And so it's your listeners, you, myself, know that it's a huge system with a large population, with a low budget, with high influence from pharma. And that's probably the root of many things. And it's a system that is so enormous that how do you fix something that is that big? And you start by people investing in themselves, and brave people that have courage like yourself that are willing to stand up and be on podcasts and interview people like myself. People like myself that had the courage to go to school 30 years ago, you know, way long before this was even popularized. And we've had to fight the system for years and stand for what we knew was right. It harkens back to the days, and this is just so, I mean, it's really funny when we used to get scolded for giving probiotics. Now everything's about the microbiome. And I understand the science is better. Or one of the other things is that NDs would always get chastised for is giving bioidentical hormones. And now everybody's giving them, and these docs are coming out of their insurance-based practices, and they're going to they're seeing the cash. And it's, you know, they laugh at us NDs knowing basic physiology and how to work with the body and using reasonability, and then we get laughed at, and then, you know, and made fun of, and then we continue to do what is right, and then they just follow, you know, they end up following along. And it does make me laugh, because it's unfortunately, it's not funny like haha, it's funny like, you know, if I could just go back to that day and show them what's going on, what they would be doing today in 2024, it would just feel good. Not like I need to get back at anybody. I'm totally, you know, happy with how our career, you know, my career has been. But it's really important to recognize that we have a system that is trying to cater to all the different incomes, including people that don't have a non-governmental income. And that becomes really difficult. And I think you and I would probably agree that it boils down to education. Look at what's on TV, look at what's available. And we're in an era now where social media is so grabbable by everybody. You don't have to watch network TV, because look at the commercials. You know, I don't even watch network TV, but when I do for a special, I see like the Super Bowl or something. I saw how many drug commercials. I was amazed. I was like, wow, I didn't know that was happening. But you know, the understanding of how a human is supposed to treat the human body just hasn't been broadcast. But nowadays, and with the upcoming generations, the info's there. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. You know, you talked about having to, you know, defend for the right to be able to treat patients with naturopathic medicine, and for the right to continue, you know, sharing what you do. And, you know, that's very common in this country, in the United States, where these natural forms of medicine are constantly under attack. You're in Arizona, so I'm sure, or love to ask you, did you hear about the Arizona House Bill 2739 that just, that was introduced in February of 2024? It was a proposal that seeks to dissolve the Board of Homeopathic and Integrative Medicine Examiners in Arizona?
Well, I don't know. I'm actually on our licensing board, and they may, interesting, dissolve that. I wonder if they're somehow we're absorbing them somehow.
So the bill was proposed to transfer all the powers, duties, and remaining funds to the Board of the Naturopathic Physicians Medical Board.
Okay, there we go. So then that makes sense. So then we'll share executive directors. I mean, here I am literally on the licensing board. I didn't go to the meeting. Well, the meeting was actually yesterday. I wasn't able to make it. I just haven't been apprised. And very interesting.
Do you know why that would happen? Because I have homeopathic medical doctors who are also trained as homeopathic medical doctors, that hold both licenses in Arizona, who are completely against that and have been asking for people to vote against that bill because they don't want that.
Yeah, I would vote against that as well.
You would?
We've absorbed the duties of our executive director, and it's probably based on funding, and that our board has traditionally been strong. This is actually my 12th year on our board. I've served 2 6-year government appointed or governor appointed, whatever you call it, terms. Mm-hmm. And we're trained in homeopathy, but we don't have an MDH behind our name, and we're not MDs. You know, and so I don't know how that's going to work. I don't know all the legislation and the administration behind that. I mean, we'll do what we need to do. I think if above all, we understand the intent of that board. I was around when that homeopathic board was developed. I've been around a decent amount of time, and people who started ACAM, and the chelation docs and all that. I mean, they were my original mentors. Some of them have passed. So I've seen the homeopathics develop, and I've just been around those docs. So I think if intent is there, we hold that, but I don't know all the laws. So I would vote against it as well. As long as there was funding, and maybe there's not enough docs around that even comprise a board, you know, it might just be sort of logistics and not, you know, another issue or foul play or something like that. Mm.
Do you know Dr. Thomas Lodi?
I know. Yeah, I know him.
Mm-hmm. He's an MDH. He's got a clinic there in south of Phoenix, I believe. I can't remember. I think it's Mesa.
He's in Mesa. Lodi was part of our clinic at one time back when we had Aiden Clinic back in Tempe, when we used to do immunotherapy way back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
That was the late 90s.
Yeah, I know he was against that bill. He was talking with me about it. I saw it was introduced February. It didn't, so far, I don't know what's happened to it. There's not enough information on the website. Like, it doesn't say, you know, if the voting happened. It doesn't say it passed the House or the Senate or anything, but I'm not sure what's happened on the voting, or if they didn't vote, or if they held it off.
It was just introduced. You know how things go slowly.
Yeah, that's true.
It's got to be argued, and then it's got to be.
So. Yeah. I just know he was really against it for whatever reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like taking away the board that, you know, it's like they're bored. I mean, if all of a sudden we were absorbed by like the chiropractic board, I'd be like, they're totally not naturopathic doctors.
Right. You know? Exactly. There's differences, but it's natural medicine goes back. It's so funny. We call conventional medicine traditional medicine, but traditional medicine is actually what's been traditionally used for thousands of years. So if you go back to TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, which is all natural in nature or holistic in nature, you go back to Ayurvedic medicine from India, which goes back 5,000 plus years. That's traditional medicine. Indigenous medicine is traditional medicine, where that word kind of got co-opted today, where, you know, now we call conventional medicine traditional medicine, but traditional is actually what our ancestors have always used, which is natural in nature, clearly.
I mean, it's only been a few years since we've had technology that what we consider technology. I mean, you hearken back exactly. And it's a shame.
So I am in agreement with you, though, on the integrative aspect. I actually produced a film a few years back called Cancer, the Integrative Perspective. And I spent about 5 years directing, producing, editing, narrating that film. It's since won, I think, over 20 awards now. And it was really exploring that idea of, you know, how do we take the best of all worlds, the best of natural medicine, holistic, Ayurvedic, traditional Chinese medicine, energy medicine, and conventional medicine, the best of what we have today technologically, low-dose chemotherapy, IPT, insulin potentiated therapy, for example. Sometimes, you know, I just talked to a woman from I am a partner in a company called Conquering Cancer, and we do, you know, coaching and masterclasses and documentary series. And we have people been following our programs last few years and reaching out to us and sharing with us their cancer healing stories, you know, reversing stage 3, stage 4 cancers, following our work. I talked to a woman the other day who said she had tumors wrapped all up and down her spine and metastasized throughout her entire body. She had to get, you know, flown in for an emergency spinal surgery. And, you know, that surgery, getting those tumors off her spine saved her life. And then she says, you know, I changed my diet. She still had cancer all over, but she did a round of chemo and it made her unbelievably sick. And she just said, no way. She did a round of radiation. And it just tore her up. She said, no way. She changed her diet, lifestyle, detox, you know, emotional healing, all the things that we teach through my company. And here she is, you know, a couple of years later saying, you know, we absolutely saved her life. She's just crying and sharing her story that she says she wouldn't be here without all the things that she's been doing. And that's an integrative approach, right? She had surgery to help basically save her from being paralyzed or dying, like literally within weeks, potentially, and then changed all the other aspects that are extending her life and improving. What she said now is, you know, it's significantly improved the quality of her life because she had so much pain, she couldn't get out of bed, you know, and now she's got a mountain bike, she's mountain biking through the mountains, you know, she's gardening, she's doing all this stuff, and her quality of life, you know, she still has some of the cancer there, but some of it has regressed and her quality of life has significantly increased.
Cancer saved her life.
You hear that so often, right? Because, and it's not because of the cancer, it's because of the perspective on the cancer, right? One of my good friends and integrative cancer doctors, Michael Carlfelt, owns the Carlfelt Center in Meridian, Idaho. And I'm really grateful that their team has sponsored this episode. Dr. Carlfelt is a globally renowned naturopathic doctor in integrative oncology, and his center pioneers cutting-edge alternative therapies to combat cancer. They offer cutting-edge therapies, including high-dose IVs, ozone therapy, curcumin, mistletoe, photodynamic therapy, and many others within their 17,000-square-foot advanced medical and wellness treatment facility. With decades of expertise, they offer comprehensive root cause medicine tailored to support your healing journey. You can begin your transformative experience with a complimentary 15-minute discovery call. You can call them at 208-338-8902 or visit their website at thecarlfeltcenter.com. Again, that's 208-338-8902 or go to the website thecarlfeltcenter.com. Hey, so if you've been following me for any time now, you know that I often talk about Helin 951, the nitrogen fermented organic soy drink. I first learned about it at an integrative cancer event years ago, and I've been taking this myself for a long time. It's so potent and it has a strong flavor, so I add their organic mint powder to it, and it's easy to take any time of day. I usually take it in the mornings. You know, I'm constantly looking into natural health products, and the ones that catch my eye are the ones with years of proven results and the science and research to back them up. I love that Helin 951 checks all of these boxes. Made from a unique 100% organic soybean grown in the high mountains of Mongolia, Helin 951 has some incredible health properties. Just a few of the benefits are more energy, better sleep, detox, longevity, better immune function, and some fantastic anti-cancer compounds. The folks over at Helin have made a page just for our followers to learn more. You can head over to helin951.com/crane. That's H-A-E-L-A-N 951.com/crane. They have special discounted packages there for you to get you started. And if you use the promo code CRANE, C-R-A-N-E, at checkout, they will also give you free shipping. So head over and grab this special offer for yourself and use the free shipping promo code CRANE, or just give them a call if that's easier for you. They are so easy to work with and have over 32 years in the industry. Again, that's helin951.com/crane.
That's a beautiful story. I mean, thank you for sharing. And that it's a true integrative case. Those technology in medicine is great when you need it. The problem with conventional medicine is that there's not a general acceptance of all the other things that are out there that have science and experience behind. And that's what I continually say is I'm here. I'm literally across the street. And literally, as we were starting this podcast, I was texting a radiation oncologist because he just referred a patient over to me, and we were just talking about the referral. And why would they refer to me? It's because I communicate with them. Number one. Number two, I also speak the language of oncology and I understand the principles and practice of it. Number three, I consider every doctor is a doctor first. Then you can specialize. You can be allopathic, you can be naturopathic, you can be chiropractic. Then you can subspecialize. Then you can be an allopathic oncologist, you can be a naturopathic oncologist, you can be a neurologist, you can be a chiropractic neurologist. So we're all doctors. The original definition of doctor is teacher. You know, Kay Ray, one of the highest precepts in naturopathic medicine, doctor is teacher, which is what you're talking about. You educate people. It's what you have this podcast for. It's conquering cancer. It's why you made your famous video, the Cancer, the Integrative Perspective, which I saw. I mean, we all saw it, right? I mean, we need that stuff. And it's about good bringing to light and bringing forward trust in cancer. So that is why in 2004, I founded the Oncology Association of Naturopathic Physicians, right? I asked my dear friend, Jason Herman up in Alaska, let's do this. Motivating reason to protect people with cancer. I'm in Arizona, 7 years out of school. I'm 100% oncology in my practice and had been, except for we did a little HIV work through the school. I needed a second job, you know, early on. And so I managed a HIV clinic for them, which at the time, back in the late 90s, oncology, hematology, they were seeing patients with HIV and AIDS. So it was natural. So, you know, we understood, and Kaposi sarcoma, which came out of that. So, you know, I did that job as well. Anyhow, point is, in the state of Arizona, it was unprofessional conduct to refer to yourself as a specialist. So how could I get the word out that I am 100% oncology to patients, and this is back in 04, right, without calling myself a specialist or an oncologist? I wasn't allowed to use any word that suggested that. So what we had to do was get acceptance by the board. So in order to get the board to recognize me as a naturopathic oncologist and get a specialty certificate, we had to have a great endeavor. So we founded the Oncology Association of Naturopathic Physicians, and through that we developed the American Board of Naturopathic Oncology. And by 2006, we had our first 7 board certified naturopathic oncologists on the continent. Now there's over 200, and true specialists. And so I'm looking at the plaque on my wall, I have the very first oncology specialty certificate on my wall over here from the state of Arizona. So we were fine. We got acceptance through our national organization, and I was finally recognized by our board, and I'm a board certified naturopathic oncologist. But why did I do it? I did it to protect the public, because oncology moves fast. It's highly complicated, and you can't just dabble in it and really help people the way that they want to be helped. And that's a really important point too, because there's so much out there now that people are able to consume on social media, on the internet. But a shout out to us practicing physicians that are still in the trenches every day, who this is what we do. And a shout out to, and a warning for people who think that they can do this on their own. Sometimes you can, but most of the time you can't. You gotta put the work in the hands of people who have skill and understand this, because the depth of what needs to be done is not something that you can kind of hock together from searching the internet. Some of us can't, right? Some of us have, I mean, obviously some of us are physicians and we understand stuff, but I see a lot of people who come into my practice who tried to do that and didn't do it right.
It's complicated. Right? It's complicated. Even in our, you know, cancer group coaching program, we still highly encourage and recommend everybody have at least an integrative oncologist in their corner, if not, you know, even 3 doctors that they can at least consult with, even a conventional, you know, oncologist for testing and so forth, a naturopathic physician we always recommend. And then, you know, some, again, I don't like the term alternative or complementary either, but, you know, more, whether it's whatever somebody's leaning more towards, it could be, you know, TCM, it could be homeopathic, whatever, but bare minimum having, you know, an integrative oncologist that you trust and who can be there in your corner, because it is complicated. You know, cancer is, on one end, it's like really simple. Once we dive into the literature and understand what actually causes cancer, like it's actually very simple. But But when it's spread throughout your entire body, it's metastasized, it's stage four, you know, it's through your lymphatic system, it's in your lungs, it's all over the place. Like, that is complicated. And, you know, no matter what route you take, there's no guarantees. There's no oncologist, no, you know, holistic doctor that can guarantee you that you're going to have success, no amount of drugs, nothing. But there is, what I always tell people is, you know, when you got the right people in your corner and you have hope and you're focused on finding the best solutions and you're staying positive, we know through the psychological studies that have been done on cancer patients who have thrived, who've beaten cancer and thrived, that that positive mental attitude is actually one of the commonalities amongst cancer conquerors, as I like to call them.
So well said and so important.
So I want to ask you, one of those core causes of cancer clearly is inflammation, and not just inflammation, but chronic inflammation. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we live in a society that's chronically inflamed. You know, a good portion of us sit in a cubicle with, you know, glaring overhead lights. They're not full spectrum. They don't have access to daylight. They're breathing indoor air almost all the time. You know, at 3 o'clock when they have an adrenal drop and they get hungry, they go to the vending machine, buy a Coke and a York peppermint patty and play with their insulin. And maybe they're frustrated at their job and then they get in their car. Maybe they live in the upper Northwest where they don't see a lot of sun. They get home, there's more indoor, you know, it's like things like that. If that's a, you know, potentially typical American lifestyle, then your relationship with nature is different. You know, the distance that you view with your eyes in 3D is different. You know, a lot of people get the reality represented on a 2D screen, which is just really difficult for the brain to interpret. And there is EMF all around us. There's stressors that we don't understand. Maybe it's just driving in traffic every day. Maybe it's, you know, maybe you're able to conquer some of your stress, but the food that you eat doesn't give you the nutrients in order to do that. And so you have a missing link and you just have, you know, constitutive level or custodial amount of inflammation we need, right? That's part of our response. It's just like we need a stress response. It's just when it gets overbearing and we can't control it. And so America's chronically inflamed, from our sleeping habits to our food supply to our vacation schedules to wanting to look good on social media to not walking to work to maybe the way that we, you know, interact from, you know, traveling for work and just all of the things that we're exposed to. And like you said before, you mentioned genomics or genetics, and we're unique and people have different susceptibilities. And so inflammation takes a toll on our genetics. And we know that, I mean, the definition of a cell that has become cancerous is when something goes, there's an error in the division in the genetic code of the cell that just divided, and now you have a cancer cell. And there's that adage that, oh, everybody has cancer cells all the time in their body. And that's true. I mean, the older we get, the less cells are dividing, but the more mistakes that we can make. And if a cells has corrupted sort of software architecture and doesn't have the capacity for self-destruction, then you get cell survival. And then that cell has replicative ability. And then now you have two cells. And then, you know, exponentially they grow as long as, you know, they can escape immune surveillance and they can survive. So from an inflammatory perspective, when I talk about diet with people, and I don't do a ton of the diet work in our clinic, but you know, you can't escape diet. We're humans, so we have to think about our diet. And I talk about fruits and vegetables, plant food, high in photonic energy, right? This clinic is about the sun. We're about resilience. You know, we practice the resilience model of cancer care. We talk about the sun, and you know, not just because we're in Arizona, but just because it's a real entity. And I think there's not enough, we don't talk enough about the sun in medicine. There are no real clinics are outdoors. Some clinics don't even have natural light. Some docs don't even really understand that, but we all know how we feel when we go out in the sun. So you have one of the highest expressions of plants is the fruit. And I tell people, okay, imagine my white shirt or this blue, whatever color I'm wearing. If I take a blueberry and rub it on there, it's going to stain. that thing has high photonic energy. And that's something that I say goes like this. Sorry, I hit my computer, but goes like this. Thou shall not pass, right? They are the protectors of the genes. And so the more photonic energy and dark.
What did you say is a protector of the genes? It cut out.
I'm sorry. That was me. Things like berries, those high expressions of this of the plant that carry a lot of photonic energy are thou shall not pass. They're protectors of the genes. They happen to be anti-inflammatory.
The specifics in those are the things like the polyphenols, clearly the antioxidants, right? I mean, all this stuff has been researched so deeply. I mean, the vitamins, the minerals, right? The phytonutrients, phyto meaning plant. It's so funny. You have this whole, you know, community of doctors who are coming out online that are saying, actually, plants have these anti-nutrients. Plants are bad for you, so you should avoid them. When in fact, every major study we have, hundreds of studies with hundreds of, actually millions of people, the more plants you have in your diet, the healthier you are long term, the less cancer you have, less all-cause mortality, less diabetes, et cetera. And that in a mechanism where, yeah, maybe, you know, there's a so-called anti-nutrient that might bind to a little bit of calcium from the plants or whatever, but when you're getting a diverse variety of different plant foods that are filled with these antioxidants, these polyphenols, these phytonutrients, that the total collective benefit is significantly higher and greater than what might be considered as this tiny, you know, detrimental mechanism, right? And that's why we can't mix up, you know, mechanistic studies with outcome studies, which is what a lot of these carnivore doctors online are doing right now and saying, oh, plants are all bad for you because they bind to some minerals and have some anti-nutrients. It's like, yeah, but all the studies actually show us the opposite of that. And I think it's important because there's so much misinformation online now that's confusing the crap out of people.
You know, and I'm not aware of that information, but I find that utterly ridiculous. I can't understand a scientific mechanism. All I have to do is open these blinds. It's going to be 90 here today, and it's what, April 12th or something, and the sun is shining down. So that's what I often do with patients. I'll say, look out there. You know that if you sit in the sun, you're going to, and you don't go inside, you're going to get pretty sunburned. And it's going to be bad, and you could develop cancer from repeat. Why does it all day sit in the sun? Well, what is it doing? It's producing antioxidants to fight the photonic energy. And photonic energy is radiation therapy too. Photonic energy, just like from the sun. That's why there's a light dark. I mean, there's a reason that we, you know, cover up and need to protect ourselves.
Not to mention a hormone that's synthesized in the body, we all know as vitamin D, where in fact studies have shown upwards of 60% of people around the world are actually deficient in vitamin D. And, you know, talking about the sun, I love that you're bringing that up, because people think that, I know people who avoid the sun at all costs because they don't want their skin to age or they don't want skin cancer. But in fact, that sun, as you're saying, is not only so essential to get that photonic energy through the foods that we're eating, but also to actually synthesize the vitamin D in our bodies, which we know is essential for upregulating the immune system and fighting against cancer. So clearly you don't want to be in the sun 8 hours a day and be sunburned all day, every day, but, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, up to an hour of sunshine most days, certainly if you're in areas where, you know, areas on the planet, where you can actually get enough sunshine. You know, if you're up in Alaska, it's very difficult, but, you know, and you may have to take a supplement, but that vitamin D is just, it's so essential. I literally was outside having a meeting outside today, 30 minutes in the sunshine, barefoot on the earth, you know, absorbing those electrons from the earth, which are also natural antioxidants. You know, not too long ago, people were like, oh, this is all hippie nonsense. And even though I feel like a hippie at heart, I love digging into and understanding the science behind what's actually happening with connecting to nature, and is powerful.
So that's exactly what I was referring to about how we were laughed and scoffed at. And when you are intelligent and thinking and you understand how to treat a human body and you are aware of what happens when you put certain drinks in your body and how you feel and you understand, you know, what's happening when you're eating, then, you know, science kind of corrupts that and kind of gets in the way. Just like you were saying, if I take Sometimes I need an extract of a plant to shut down a certain mechanism, right? Like I may need a galectin 3 inhibitor. And we should probably, let's talk about, especially when we talk about inflammation, because galectin 3 is an unsung inflammatory that people are starting to really become aware about. We've been testing this in our clinic and using anti-galectin 3 agents for years, but, and now it's becoming a drug target, but I want to talk about this as soon as I'm done. The idea would be is, then that's an extract of a plant, but we know, like you said, there's an intelligence of plants. And I'll tell you, I know plants are intelligent because I used to do bonsais and I had a ginkgo bonsai that developed a fungal infection. And so I did acupuncture on it and I have a picture of it. And then there was two treatments, got rid of the fungal infection, right? So we can communicate using that kind of stuff. So why wouldn't you want to bring that energy in, which they inhabit the same earth as us, the same place, we all need the sun. It's just understanding. And so to hear that you shouldn't eat plants, that to me sounds like you could develop cancer from just eating meat. Actually, there's a personal story of somebody that I know that it wasn't cancer, but it was something else debilitating that happened when they went on an all meat diet. I don't know. We could probably talk about that, but you asked me to talk about inflammation. So galectin 3 is a molecule in the body. It is a lectin. And I'm guessing that the carnivores are saying that plants have lectins that negatively interact with your body and you shouldn't eat them and you got to be careful. And there's doctors out there who talk about lectinology, et cetera. That's where the whole eat right for your blood type. And I was around when that developed because it's naturopathic doctors who developed that. And I'm down with lectinology. Like that makes sense, right? Because we have red blood cells and we have receptors on our cells that interact with lectins. The issue is that a gallectin, so a type of lectin, molecule in your body is called galectin. And galectin has a role to play. It has a housekeeping role. But through inflammatory means or through overstimulation, you can get an upregulation of galectin 3. And galectin 3 can really play a negative role. It's a pro-fibrotic agent. It can be a pro-cancer agent, and I can go through the mechanisms of that. And the only, to my knowledge, known galectin 3 inhibitor comes out of the pith of the citrus fruit, the inside of the soup that we don't eat. And, I test galectin 3, and it's amazing how many people have non-optimal levels of galectin 3 in their body. And I don't know any other doctors. I mean, the whole thing was developed by Dr. Isaac Elias back in the day, when he, had such forward thinking and was really putting forth, optimal levels, not using the standard levels. And we can talk about what comes on lab tests, and I'm happy to, indulge, but this is a need to be known molecule. If there's physicians listening, I'm gonna encourage you to start measuring galectin 3, your commercial labs do it. It's really well known in cardiac remodeling after myocardial infarction. That means after a heart attack, you have part of your heart that either dies off or doesn't get oxygen. And so the higher your galectin 3 after a heart attack, the worse your heart recovers. It gets more stiff, and a stiff heart doesn't work well. You don't want that. So imagine, and that's just one set of data. And when you get, your lab test back, it gives you results in terms of cardiac remodeling, but in cancer, it's a huge target. And so what the companies do is they take the pith of these citrus fruits and they take the pectin out of there and they modify it into an absorbable interactive way so that it can interact with the galectin 3, neutralize it so it can't have the negative effects on your body. It might still be there, but it's not having the negative effect. And fibrosis in human health is incredible. I don't know how often you talk about fibrosis on your podcast, but that is, if you don't talk about it a lot, we should probably talk about it, because fibrosis is getting old. Fibrosis is scarring in the body. And fibrosis happens, it's a huge player in the oncology world. The more fibrosis we have, the less your immune system can get in, the more connective tissue your molecules have to go through to get delivered to the target area, the less chemotherapy could work, the less oxygen penetrance you're gonna have, so radiation doesn't work. Surgery might be more difficult because you have too many adhesions. Drug delivery, the bigger the molecule, the harder it might be to squeeze through some of these areas, and especially if you have smaller vasculature that you need to deliver medicines, even nutrients. The larger the molecule, the smaller the space. I mean, if you can't get a molecule through, you're certainly not going to get a white blood cell over there. So that, you know, talks about, you know, why inflammation, especially from the fibrotic perspective, and there's a whole repertoire of tests that we'll use on panels that are cohorts with galectin 3, but we only know of one galectin 3 inhibitor, and a true one, and that's the small one, and that's the Pepto-Sol that's available on the market. It's the only one that, to my knowledge, has been studied. That's the only one that, to my knowledge, it's the only one we use in our clinic. And it's, I mean, I took it this morning. But, and a lot of my patients will measure their galectin 3, they're going through active treatment, they get better, their galectin 3 sort of goes down. And I'm like, you know, if you want to lessen your burden, you know, this is one that maybe you could be done with. And they're like, can I just keep taking it? I feel really good when I take it. I like the mechanism, I like what it does, I like the taste. And I'm like, yeah, it's not toxic. And why not, as they age? And so,
No, I want to dive into that deeper. I mean, I personally use Pepto-Sol as well. Dr. Isaac Elias is a good friend of mine. He's in my Holistic Leadership Council. I actually just spent last weekend with him down in Playa del Carmen, discussing a lot of these topics. Yeah, it was incredible. And what a revolutionary doctor, right? And scientist, and discovering, you know, really helping bring this work forward, and you know, you're continuing this work forward, which is incredible. And I think, you know, to translate for people a little bit, and, you know, correct anything that I say, if anything I say is wrong, because, you know, I've just recently learned about galectin 3 in the last couple of years and have been diving into the research. And what I've come to learn so far, basically, and why this is important for people, and my, you know, analysis of this is, you know, galectin 3 is that upstream molecule, which in fact is a protein, right? Isn't it a protein?
Galectin 3.
Yeah, isn't galactin 3 a protein?
It's protonaceous, but it has a lot of residues, galactosidase.
Yeah, so basically it's an upstream molecule that actually triggers the release of a lot of the inflammatory cytokines in the body, right? It's before the interleukins, it's before these inflammatory cytokines. And so, you know, when you're going after the inflammatory cytokines, you're actually late in the process, which is why Pepto-Sol, from the studies I've seen, works so well, because it actually goes upstream to galectin 3, which is kind of the trigger of it. And why are we having so many of these inflammatory cytokines being released, right? Like, galectin 3 is not, like, I wouldn't look at it like, hey, that's the enemy. But because of our diet and lifestyle, we have excessive amounts of galectin 3 being released, which means we have excessive amounts of inflammatory cytokines being released, which means we're contributing to this chronic inflammatory state in the body, which is damaging tissues and organs, which is leading to fibrosis and all this, you know, scarring, which is, you know, contributing towards diseases like cancer and others, you know, heart disease and so forth, showing up in the body, right? So because diet and lifestyle, toxins, you know, alcohols and cigarettes and all these things that are chronically inflaming the body, we have way too much of this inflammatory state. And so by using something like modified citrus pectin, you actually stop the upstream molecule of galectin 3 and help reduce that inflammatory state in the body. Is that an accurate way to describe it?
Yeah, and I would say we would regulate galectin 3.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't fully stop it. It like regulates it, it reduces it. Is that right?
Yeah, and modify and neutralizes. Well, it depends what your level is, right? Dr. Elias, I have kinship with him as well. We've talked much about this. And so our particular lab, anything under 22.2 is considered normal. But according to, you know, Dr. Elias, we've always held the optimal, and that's a lab core value. We want you at 13 or under. It's the same thing for insulin. Insulin, they change their values. You know, we used to have like an insulin value of 15, but we now have an insulin value, anything under 24.9 is considered normal, but not in my clinic. I want it definitely under 13 or below. We're trying, you know, regulate it under 10. So with galectin 3, you have to dose appropriately. I mean, if somebody has a 9.3 and that's what we can recover in the blood, you also have to think, and they have active tumor burden, you have to think about what's going on in the tumor microenvironment too. So we may treat somebody with a galectin 3 of 9.3, but we're definitely going to treat somebody who's above 13, and certainly people who are above the 22.2, and we're going to be regulating dosages. And some people, I think, genetically, like we had talked about, there's what we call a custodial or a constituent level of galectin 3 that, you know, kind of swims around and does its thing and communicates, and it helps protect, and it help, you know. But when you're living up here with galectin 3 because you're stressed out, or there's something that's really aggravating you, or maybe you just, your galectin 3 switch is easier to turn on than somebody else's, which is, I don't know of any genes being looked at for galectin 3, but I certainly have it in my patients. You know, we treat them for all of the above, but they still might have a higher than optimal galectin 3 level, or higher than 22.2 galectin 3 level. And why is that? So, and I have that with other markers that we use, interleukin 6, VEGF, interleukin 8. You know, we've developed this lab profile over the years, the fibrinogens. You know, we were the first ones to use this stuff and really bring it forward and teach lab evaluation. Now a lot of people have really developed that into their practice, which is great, because you can really, and we can talk about this too in my practice, I say, you know, smell smoke in the basement. You know, if people are coming to me because they don't want to see cancer on their scan again, and I can read their blood values, and if I smell smoke, I'm going to change their treatment, or I'm going to treat them more heavily, or turn up the volume on something. So I'm constantly looking at these values and reading through them, and become, you know, expert at the, you know, the biophysical analysis, or sorry, biophysiological analysis through multiple levels of lab testing, which is what harkens back to what you were talking about once you've been through it, you don't want to go through it again. And or you can maintain control, because by watching certain lab values, you can begin to understand certain cues about what you would consider the tumor microenvironment or the biophysiological balance or the behavior of the body in response to maybe there's existing tumors there that are just quiescent and they're under control. And so hence the importance of lab values. And like you said, galectin 3 is at the top, and sort of a master switch for inflammation.
Can you talk about some of the clinical data specifically related to cancer?
Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, there was just a recent publication of a great trial with people with prostate cancer, like true data. Like you're asking about not just, oh, we know the mechanism and so we're gonna take structure and function and move it together. You're talking about actually published data. So it was like a two-step process, right? Initially, there was 49 people with prostate cancer, different Gleason grades, you know, different situations. And they took Pactisol for 6 months, and they watched their PSA, they watched their scans, they watched what's called PSA doubling time. And those who had, there was success. And so out of those 49 participants, they offered them another 12 months of treatment. And this is the study I want to talk about because it's totally cool. Seven people decided they didn't want to stay in the study, because with the study you had to travel to a certain location to get monitored. So they just stayed on the supplement themselves and bought it themselves. 39 patients stayed on it, and they took it for another 12 months. They were taking 4.8 grams three times a day. It's not that hard to do. Not everybody needs it three times a day. That was the study.
So it's basically 15 grams a day. So it's about five grams three times a day, roughly, is what you're saying.
Yeah, totally. Easy to take. And these are gentlemen with prostate cancer. And these are some people who have aggressive prostate cancer. Gleason grade is a way to determine the aggressiveness of the prostate cancer. And so basically you're looking at people with a combined Gleason grade of 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10, 10 being the most aggressive, more difficult to treat. I believe 21% of these patients in the study actually had Gleason grade 8 through 10, which means that they're one of the cohorts had aggressive disease. All of these patients had prior treatment. They either had surgery, they had radiation, or they had surgery and radiation. And 38% of them had actually had hormone therapy before. So they were pre-treated, and all of them had what's called biochemically relapsed prostate cancer, which means the PSA, the marker that you use to watch, should be maximally suppressed. And then it wasn't, it started to go up, which means that there's prostate cancer lurking somewhere in your body. So that's called biochemical relapse, meaning you see it biochemically, but you don't necessarily see it on the scan. And then what they did, they took the Pectisol and they looked at, over a 12-month period, did the PSA go down? Did it stabilize or did it increase? And what happened with what's called the PSA doubling time? So if a PSA was 1 and then it goes to 2, that's a doubling time. And then what would it take to go to 4? These are high. So we're usually talking about something, you know, in the tenths. So maybe 0.2 goes to 0.4, but that's still a doubling time. And that's still absolutely important relative. And usually, and it's very important. So they looked at also not just PSA, but did people have lengthening of the doubling time, right? Which you want, you don't want a shortening. And then they also looked at scans. Did people at the end of the study have a scan that was positive or was it negative? And there was an 85% overall response rate, 85% response rate. 90% of those people actually had a lengthening of their PSA doubling time, meaning it took longer for the PSA to go up. But there was only 10% of people who didn't respond like that. And 90% of people maintained a negative scan. Wow. 10% of people had a positive scan. You're going to have some like that, especially in the higher Gleason grades. These are pretreated people. That's astonishing data for a well-tolerated, easy to obtain, good tasting, highly effective, well-studied nutritional supplement that people could get right now after this podcast.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
I was just studying prostate cancer.
That's pretty incredible. And it still blows my mind. It still blows my mind that you can have prostate cancer. You can have the prostate removed, and the prostate cancer can still come back, right? And your PSA levels can increase. I met with a client the other day who had the exact same scenario happen. It still blows my mind. And then, you know, you have something like this that can really help the body regulate itself against that inflammatory mechanism that's basically happening in the body. So what else have you seen clinically with your cancer patients, of maybe different types of cancer, and using Pectisol?
No, it's a great question. Thank you. Actually, I want to go back to what you just said about the amazement where you can have a total prostatectomy, the prostate's removed, and then there's still prostate cancer cells living in the body, and then they can recur. That is not uncommon in other types of cancer. It's one of the great aggravations that I've had in my career. And sometimes, you know, there used to be less reliance on MRIs pre-prostatectomy. And people they'd say like, oh, you know what, there was some extra prostatic extension into the tissues. We'll watch your PSA. You might require radiation after surgery, you know, if the PSA goes up. The problem is even if you have a positive margin, meaning there was a chance that cancer was left behind in the surgery, despite it being a great surgery, that doesn't mean that cancer is going to stay local to that area. And like you said, cancer can directly invade or cancer can metastasize, two routes of spread. And I always tell my patients, metastasis is when you gain access to the blood or the lymphatic system and you can go on a ride and you can, you know, spread throughout the body. And direct invasion is when you sort of just grind into the tissues and, you know, grow there. The metastatic process is entirely important because even if that patient who had biochemical recurrence, and even if they said, you know what, our best step is conventionally, our best next step would be for us to do radiation in the prostate bed. And they get radiation, maybe they have erectile dysfunction, maybe they have pelvic problems, and maybe they even get radiation proctitis, which we need to talk about. I need to circle back on this regarding Pectisol C, because I know of nothing else that's going to help prevent that. And this is a message to all men out there who are either getting or got radiation therapy. And I want to talk about our experience with that. But that doesn't mean if they get the radiation that there isn't cancer cells spreading in the body. And why not do a simple Medicare covered, insurance covered circulating tumor cell test right here in the United States? You can do it. We've been doing it for years. We've looked at that. It's data driven, right? Now you can do circulating tumor DNA. You don't have to just watch PSA. There's so many ways to look at it. Use our lab profile. I mean, this is 2024, we have ways to monitor. But one of the molecules that interacts with the cancer cell and may encourage metastatic spread is galectin-3. So from a preventative standpoint, people with cancer that are at risk for recurrence distantly, and recurrence is kind of a misnomer. If it recurs, it never really went away in the first place. It just showed up somewhere else. So I'm trying to kind of get away, but it's a colloquialism that
it's true though, because those cancer stem cells, we know, I mean, this is peer reviewed in the literature. We know that chemotherapy and radiation don't actually kill cancer stem cells. So we can get rid of the tumor. We can, you know, reduce the tumor burden. You know, we can really even get to a sign of no evidence of disease. But if we don't do anything about the cancer stem cells, it's very possible that they're still there circulating through the body. The CTCs you just talked about, circulating tumor cells, for example, the stem cells specifically, if the environment doesn't change in which allowed the cancer to form in the body, then those stem cells are basically, you know, the mother cells that are going to help new cancers form and metastasize. And then that's what we would call a recurrence, right? Which is really, like you said, the cancer actually never really left. We had those stem cells there that were just ready to take root.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. We've developed several formulas in our clinic that are targeted towards the cancer stem cells. When we were able to look at EMT transform cytokeratin negative CTCs, we developed a whole stem cell platform. That lab test isn't available anymore. And I really wish that a lab would let us see though, but we those cells, but we used to look for cancer stem cells in the blood. Right there with you on that. We do a lot of lab testing around that. We do a lot of treatment around that. Galectin-3 is a player there. But like renal cell carcinoma, you asked me about other cancers. Renal cell carcinoma, surgery is the primary option, but we see a lot of down the line, years later, people may have a lesion in their lung. And it might just be that they're not screened, you know, well enough to be able to target that lesion when it's small. And there's local treatments you can do. You know, renal cell doesn't respond to traditional chemotherapy and radiation, responds immunotherapeutically. And so we've, you know, over the years, we've done a lot of work, you know, with people with renal cell carcinoma. That's one of those where after surgery, people need to be monitored and screened, in my opinion. But we see galectin-3 in those typical sort of, like you said early on in the podcast, almost diseases, cancers of lifestyle, like colorectal disease, some lung cancers. I mean, it really depends upon the person too, and what the biophysiological phenomena are in that person, especially if you can lab them up while they have disease burden. So if I see them post-surgery, I never know what their biophysiology was like pre-surgery. So now that we're able to get the word out more, we're seeing more and more people sort of right at diagnosis or right when they had a colonoscopy or something. So we can really get a feel, take them through treatment, and then say, okay, now we have a way to screen you for years. And if we ever see your interleukin-8 go up, or your interleukin-6, you know, go up with your MMP-9, and if we see a little snickering of ceruloplasmin, or, you know, whatever it is, the profile for that patient, or maybe it's an organic acid test and there's a particular marker, maybe it's a stool test, maybe it's a micronutrient profile, but, you know, really, really monitoring these people, especially years later, that's really one of the most beautiful and elegant places for a doctor like myself, because there's a gargantuan in allopathic medicine, that's an unrealized gap. They don't even see the gap. We see the gap. And that's real. That's a big part of where we come in. A lot of people think like, can you just, you know, kind of get me through and make the chemotherapy easier, get me through radiation, et cetera. And it's like life after cancer. And so I wanted to get back to radiation proctitis, because that's something where I think we can be really, really influential with the Pectisol. I don't know anybody else who talks about this. This was just kind of one of our findings, because we used to have clinics and different radiation oncology clinics in the Valley here. And there are men who, even several months to a year down the line after radiation therapy for prostate cancer, can develop a severe inflammation of the rectum called radiation proctitis, and it's problematic. And if the end result of that is fibrosis of the rectum, that could be really problematic. If you want your rectum to be nice and, you know, the muscle, you don't want it to be hard when stool comes from, it's uncomfortable. So that's a primary reason why I like to use Pectisol when people are going through radiation therapy. That's not a prescription. That's not me telling a patient to do it. That's me saying what I do for my patients when I prescribe it. But if you're somebody going through radiation therapy, you should ask your doctor about this. And if you're somebody with prostate cancer and you fit into that cohort, this is data driven, what we talked about. Bring it to your urologist. It's peer reviewed literature. It's undeniable.
When you measure inflammatory markers in patients, whether it's interleukins, whatever other inflammatory markers, maybe even hsCRP, for example, and then you measure galectin 3, do you always, at least yourself, do you always see if these inflammatory markers are elevated, that galectin 3 is always going to be elevated as well?
No, we don't. And it's a great question.
Interesting.
That's where the skill comes into reading, because I could have a panel and all of those that you mentioned, you know, with all of the markers that are sort of downstream, the upstream, the downstream, in the middle, and say I do 23 lab tests on somebody, that's one result to me, because I'm going to look at that. And oftentimes I have a certain method of how I go through this, and if any of my patients are listening, they're like, yeah, that's Dr. Rubin, we go through and we chart out all the labs, and I make little comments and I do my thing, and then I give them a summary. And so all of those could be normal, but they're still abnormal in my head, because I can see the picture and you can see the biochemical interrelatedness. And so just because somebody might have an hsCRP of 0.9 and normal's under 1, and their fibrinogen antigen may be high, but it may be, you know, I have my levels, right? If normal's up to 504, I want it at a certain rate. If I'm doing glyc A, normal's up to 400, I want them under 350. But there's also the ratios of how they interact with each other, and that's where we try and sniff stuff out. That's the smoke in the basement, and that's how we develop our protocols when we're looking at it biophysiologically. Then you start bringing in the other physiological tests. Now you got a greater picture of people, and it's something we call grand planning, where you amalgamate all these labs, talk to the people, and you know, do your symptom overview, and then you use your substances and your lifestyle. And, you know, for some people, maybe it's EMDR therapy. And for some people, maybe it's frequency specific microcurrent, like you said, maybe it's TCM, maybe it's pure supplements, maybe I need to put them on IV therapy. You know, it depends what's more, you know, maybe they just need to be in the sun, or they need to, you know, take a vacation or something. And then we do labs. So we do a lot of that. But the answer to your question is no, I don't always see galectin 3 being above 13 when there is an inflammation. And maybe that's because of their genetics. Maybe they're doing something to control the galectin 3, but downstream it's not as well controlled.
Yeah, I wonder if does galectin 3 stay elevated after it's kind of done its job of like activating these other inflammatory markers, and is that what could have caused it to come down possibly? Do you know about that? I'm just theorizing. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe you're treating it, or maybe that switch isn't really one that stays on, but once you've flipped on a downstream switch, that one's harder to turn off. And even if you turn off galectin 3, it's the lights still stay on in the other room, so to speak.
What percentage of galectin 3 is elevated in your patients, would you say, roughly?
Overall, 65 to 70%.
It's a pretty high number.
And granted, some of these people I'm not testing only, so those are the tested population. Some, you know, we can't order through their insurance or through Medicare, and so they opt out of testing.
Now, just in general, is like, I'm an athlete, I tear my body down a lot, right? I take Pectisol just in general as kind of like a preventative measure, if you will, you know, helping keep galectin 3, you know, at a healthy level. Like, for general population or people who want to stay healthy or even potentially prevent chronic diseases down the road, you know, would you say Pectisol is a good option for people?
You called it. That's why we're taking it. You called it. I that's why it's kind of like a gift, you know, to inhibit galectin 3. It's part of that healthy aging. And that's a big thing right now in regenerative medicine. I mean, I'm guessing it's a part of regenerative medicine protocols. If not, something to really look into, because then you would need less medicine if you can prevent in the first place. Especially, like you said, I really think my exercise recovery has improved from a dose of Pectisol C, whether it's once a day or twice a day.
Yeah. And
feels good to have in my body.
Right. Right. And, you know, once I learned about this, you know, I've been recommending it to our community over the last couple of years, just because it was like, to me, I looked at the science, interviewed Dr. Isaac Elias a while back, and, you know, I've been sharing it because I'm just like, this is a no-brainer. You know, you have something that is simple and easy, affordable, easy to, I take capsules, but you can take the powders, you know, and all the science behind it is like, I've never seen an ingredient or a supplement out there that has as much science as this does behind it, on safety and efficacy. So
why do you take the capsules over the powder?
I don't know. I don't think it's a preference. I just think I've gotten the capsules and I just gotten used to it. But you like the powder better?
I just always thought, you know, in the world of oncology, we're giving people so many capsules that sometimes it's a nice break. And honestly, I think it's a refreshing drink. You know, that lime flavor, when he finally, you know, dialed that in, I was just like, all right.
I'll have to get some powder because I don't take that many capsules anymore. So for me, it's not that big of a deal. Like, I'll take a multivitamin. I'll take, you know, some omegas, some algae oil. Like, a lot of the things I take is either liquid or tincture based. I just don't take a lot of capsules anymore. So, like, you know, taking some capsules each day with the Pexol is like not a big deal for me. If you're, you know, on a really regimented, you know, nutritional, you know, supplemental protocol with cancer, as I know many of the clients we work with, and, you know, they work with their integrative oncologists who have them on like 20 or 30 different supplements at different times and hundreds of pills. Like, I get it. Yeah. Reducing the amount of capsules is a big deal. So for me, it's not personally really a big deal at the moment, but I don't think I've even tried the powder, so I'm going to have to get some and try it out and see what I think. And so, by the way, I want to let our community know who's tuning in on this right now is, you know, we've actually spoken with the company that produces Pectisol, Econugenics, and they've provided a mega discount for you guys. So, you know, if you're interested in trying this for yourself and using it, you know, for your own personal health reasons, we'll put a link below. My team will put a link below. There's like a really special limited time discount they've put together for you. I actually don't even know all the details on that. I'm not really in that side of things. I'm just into the research and the education and sharing what I find and use with myself with all of you. So, you know, if you want to take advantage of that really special limited time discount for you guys to get Pectisol for yourself, click the link below and go and check that out for yourself. I highly recommend it. Personally, have been using it for my own health and prevention, really, and helping me, you know, as you said, it's, you know, regenerative medicine, from a regenerative medicine approach, from a anti-aging approach, from a longevity approach. But I know a lot of our community is dealing with chronic diseases like cancer. And so being able to have high quality evidence-based solutions that have strong science behind them is really important, because there's a lot, and you mentioned this, Dr. Rubin, there's a lot of stuff out there on social media now, a lot of claims being made, you know, a lot of cure-alls and, you know, this and that. And I'm really careful not to say certain things. And I, you know, I'm not bound by any board. I'm bound by my own ethics and integrity to say, look, here's what the science says. Here's what the case studies are showing. Here's the anecdotes, you know, but you got to make a decision for yourself and your own health. I'm never going to claim something is a cure-all or going to, you know, treat you and get rid of your cancer or this or that. That's irresponsible. You know, and so I don't even do that. But when I find something that is truly backed by a tremendous amount of science, it's backed by, you know, people and a company that really cares about people, and it's working, and I see it working in myself and hearing it working in other patients, then I get behind it and say, absolutely, I recommend this. I think it's very high quality and can be very beneficial to you. So this is one of those rare products that I personally do get behind and recommend.
Yeah, and take.
And personally take, absolutely. So actually now's a perfect time. I literally took my last capsules this morning. So I'm gonna get some powder now. Yeah, I'm glad we spoke today. That's good timing. If you have a few more minutes, I want to talk with you about a couple other things.
Sure.
I'm guessing you're familiar with Otto Warburg's work in the early 1900s?
On mitochondria and Krebs and
the influence of Are you pretty much in alignment with, you know, cancer primarily being a metabolic disease, a mitochondrial dysfunctional disease, basically damage? What that research really showed and what the continuation of that research from other scientists and doctors over the last 80 plus years has gone on to actually replicate in multiple laboratories is that, you know, cancer is primarily dysfunction and degeneration and the destruction of the mitochondria in the cells, which leads that cell to chronically ferment, right? Switching from oxidative phosphorylation to aerobic glycolysis, primarily getting a lot of its fuel source from glucose, not primarily, but I mean, not totally, but often primarily. And that cancer is really a disease of dysfunction of the mitochondria. Would you agree with that? Do you have a different stance on that? What do you think about that?
I think that the enormity of the box that you just opened is consequential.
Yeah.
And that I,
to say the least.
Yes. That I think that if I were to fully agree with that, that I would not be doing my patients a service, because we've been around for that for so long. And I do enough testing on people's mitochondria and have for years. And there's enough emerging literature to say that oxidative phosphorylation is upregulated in certain cancer cell types, that if we focus on the mitochondria too much, you're going to see progressive disease in people. And so I test the electron transport chain. I look at mitochondrial metabolites on organic acid testing. I amalgamate those with my other lab tests. And I also look at symptoms. And I have to say that the answer to the question is, primarily, but not exclusively. I have to look far beyond that, because there is so much work. And I appreciate the work that's come out of on cancer as a metabolic disease and what the doctors are doing out there. But there are people who that is not true for. And I happen to work probably 20% of my practice is pediatric oncology, which I'm guessing, I don't know if you get an opportunity to interview pediatric oncologists, but some of the true heroes in this world are pediatric oncologists, not me. I mean, the conventionalists out there, the people who do this for children.
Yeah.
The true heroes, and the parents of these kids go through unimaginable strife, and that's 20% of my practice. And I don't know how their mitochondria are dysfunctional if it's a chronic disease of a lifetime. So this is a discussion that I'm having with, you know, a family regarding mitochondria and this, and looking for certain things. So the answer is, yeah, there's a lot of that primarily. And obviously I'm moved by the courage and the sheer courage of that whole world of pediatric oncology and what that is. And it's really become a bigger part of my practice, only because we interact now and it's less scary to the conventionalists. You know, Phoenix Children's Hospital and I mean, we're their go-to referral. I go speak there pretty routinely. I'll be there in June. So I don't know, because I don't know how their mitochondria then became so damaged, unless that's genomic.
Yeah, then, I mean, the fact you brought up the
children's mitochondrial DNA comes from the, so these are really deep questions. So that's why it's for me. And I am not in the camp of that is my only focus, but I know there are camps like that. And I respect those camps, and those are my colleagues. And these are people who've done great work. I just, in my practice, I think that there are times when I have to look around that.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, the fact about, you know, pediatric oncologists, you know, being heroes in the family. I mean, you know, I'm a father. I have two kids. I have, you know, 13-year-old and 8-year-old son, 13-year-old daughter. And, you know, seeing what these kids go through, I see videos on social media and see them going through, you know, the chemotherapy and radiation and fighting for their lives and losing the hair. And so, I mean, so much pain and sickness. I mean, I watched my own grandfather go through that and watched him pass away. And that's what got me into cancer research. and education was seeing what happened to him. But I mean, I can't even imagine as a father, you know, watching your children go through that, like just how devastating and challenging that would be. And so I 100% in agreement with you on that. And on the mitochondrial aspect, what's really sad actually, and I spent months preparing this heavily research-backed presentation I just gave to a group of about 700 people live, and then another, you know, thousands of people online, which is the what I call the 9 major categories of toxins that we're exposed to that are contributing massively to the cancer proliferation, right? This massive increase of cancer diagnosis we've seen in the last 70 plus years, where cancer was significantly less in people than it is now. And we see an explosion in young people, right? That study that just came out, I don't know if you've seen it, but people 50 and younger, cancer in the last 30 years has increased by upwards of 80%, right? So younger people, and in children, children are being diagnosed with higher rates of cancer now than ever before, right? 300,000 kids around the world are being diagnosed. When before it was like children never had cancer. And so as I dive deep into the research, into the toxins, we see that 140,000 man-made chemicals have been introduced and invented. And many of them are carcinogenic, they're endocrine disruptors. And what they all have in common, the ones that tend to be carcinogenic or endocrine disruptors, the ones that we say, hey, these are causing chronic inflammation or damaging our endocrine system or damaging DNA. One thing I found that every single one of these 9 major categories of toxins, what they do at a cellular level, every single one of them damages the mitochondria. And we know through the study that was done by the EWG, I think 15, 18 years ago, that, you know, how we used to think that the placenta, you know, protected the baby from the toxins that were inside the mother. We know that's not true, right? These 200 plus carcinogenic and endocrine disrupting chemicals are routinely found in the baby's cord blood. So the umbilical cord, the chemicals, which doctors used to think, oh, those don't get passed into the baby. We now know they are. So people say, well, why did God diagnose my child with cancer? They were born with cancer. Or in 3 years, 5 years later, they have cancer, or autoimmune disease, or other chronic inflammatory diseases. And I say, look, it wasn't God. We know that the mother is being, you know, bombarded by this toxic world. It's passing through the umbilical cord into the baby, and those toxins are damaging the baby at a cellular level, damaging DNA, creating reactive oxygen species, and specifically damaging and destroying the mitochondria of the cell. Yes, and so while this is, you know, and then I look at, you know, Thomas Seyfried's work, and while I agree with a lot of it, some of the approaches he uses, I don't agree with long-term, which is primarily, you know, ketogenic approach. There's pros and cons of that. But he was able to replicate the same thing that Otto Warburg, you know, discovered in the early 1900s, showing that, you know, the metabolic side of cancer, specifically the mitochondria. So anyway, I just find that really fascinating.
That sounds like fascinating work that you've produced.
Yeah, it's important that we realize what's causing cancer so we can prevent it, right? I mean, you're working with patients who have cancer and you're helping save their lives, which is incredible, important work that you're doing. And, you know, it's like, man, we've got to learn as a society what's causing it so we can stop being diagnosed with it, because it's causing so much suffering in people. And I know you're here to help stop that suffering, just like I am.
Absolutely. This is great.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Rubin, it's been great getting to know you. I appreciate you and all the work you've done. I had a question. The board that you created, naturopathic board, let me see if I get the term right. The Oncology Association of Naturopathic Physicians, which you started. Thank you for starting that, by the way, that you're the president of, your current president or founding president of it, right?
Founding president, right. Yeah. That was 2004 to 2009. After 5 years.
Gotcha. I mean, that's a huge thing. It's super important. And I was going to ask, do you know Dr. Michael Karlfeldt?
I don't know, like no, but know of, course.
Is he in that? Do you know? He probably is.
I don't know if he's a member or not.
Well, if not, I'll tell him he needs to be a part of it. He's a good friend of mine. He's got a clinic up in Idaho. He's doing some pretty revolutionary work up there as well.
Awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, anything else you wanted to share before we wrap up?
It's been fun being able to talk to you, sort of coming out of patient care and being able to express some of the stuff that we're doing. Love the work that you're doing, and just so happy that out there in social media and in Podcastville that you're doing it with a moral compass pointing the same direction that mine points, and it's fulfilling. And I just love your work, and you're influencing so many people the right way. And so thank you for having me on.
Oh, that's awesome. I really appreciate hearing that. Thank you so much. And love the work you're doing. You've obviously a pioneer in this field, and very excited, honored to have you here on a podcast. And how can people get in touch with you directly?
Oh, well, we have a phone number, and it's 480-990-1111. But of course, you know, we have a website, and our URL is listenandcare.com.
Nice. Listenandcare.com. That's a good URL. I like it.
Thank you. Then naturopathic specialist is on social media, but I couldn't give the handles right now.
Awesome. Okay, good. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. It's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort. It cares about evolution. Mm. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.